Y'all better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasion.
Guys, I've been listening to y'all since this show aired.
Just wanted to tell Ty, I appreciate how much you know about the Razorbacks. I mean, you're very knowledgeable for as young as you are.
There are people that have saved up all year and done whatever it took just to get a ticket, just to get a glimpse at the Razorbacks.
Got my keg in the freezer. We're ready to get this thing rolling and go home, baby.
I do have some bad news for you this morning. This is from Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. I'll read you the direct excerpt from his article. Two staff members who are not on-field coaches and at least one player received a positive result from coronavirus testing conducted on Sunday, the Arkansas Democrat Gazette has learned. Now, they are set to play football this Saturday. That right now is not a concern that the games get canceled, but what is a concern with this football team is you wonder through contact tracing, through maybe another subsequent positive test that we haven't learned about, that could be a concern for who may not be able to go on Saturday against the LSU Tigers.
So it has not been positive tests for the reasons directly all of these games have been canceled in recent weeks. In the SEC, we know that there is a 56-player minimum required to play these games. You got to have at least one quarterback, X number of linemen, I think it's seven linemen, so many defensive linemen in order to fill a roster to play an SEC game. That's been the reason why we've seen these games postponed the last few weeks. Teams have not been able to meet the requirements to fill the roster. So that's a concern. I think Hunter Yurcheck made the statement yesterday that as of yesterday, everything was good to move forward with the game, but you wonder about the contact tracing if that's going to be the reason. It's not the positives, it's the contact tracing that can put the brakes on your game for Saturday.
And it scares people when they see stuff like that because that is the one unavoidable. Like the coaches and the fans have no control over that when you see something like that. And we know how rapidly this can occur and spread like that. So hopefully it is contained. Hopefully that we don't hear about many more positive cases. But as we've learned through these COVID trials in college football, not just college football, professional sports, stuff tends to move relatively rapidly and not in the direction you want it to. But this is going to affect, I think, the football game on Saturday because, again, you don't know who can participate, who can't participate, and it might skew your opinion of what happens in the game come 11 a.m. Saturday.
You know, and I'm not sure we read about this recently with the Steelers, and they had a player that tested, and they put players, including Ben Roethlisberger, in quarantine. Now he was cleared late in the week to go ahead, but I'm not sure exactly how long that is at this point. So is it? I know in our case, if we're around somebody that tests positive, I think the guidelines are, if you're in quarantine without a positive, it's 14 days, like if you have a family member. But if you test positive, it's 10. So, I mean, it's kind of counterintuitive in some ways, but that's the guidelines. Waiting on the incubation period and all these things as they explain it to you. But I don't think it's quite that lengthy, and they can take tests and see if they're negative and do some things, but it's the contact tracing that's the concern, and I know we're talking football here. That's what makes me have a lot of reservations about the success and where we're moving with college basketball this year. Smaller roster, smaller team, one positive test could wipe out a great number of players on your team. At what point can you not play a game? So, this is going to be interesting to watch with basketball. Now we're seeing with football that there could be some issues this week.
Are your decisions and assumptions about the game Saturday, have they changed after you heard or read about Tom Murphy's report? 877-377-6963. Now, again, hopefully this is not one of those things where it wipes out a bunch of players, but we just don't know at this point. But this is kind of the ever-revolving world of college football where you have something like this. And I think the prime example of all this is Trevor Lawrence going out for the 2 weeks against Boston College and Notre Dame. If Notre Dame plays Clemson with Trevor Lawrence, they lose that football game, much to Zach Arnn's chagrin. But he was not eligible to play. The star freshman DJ Ugalo. Hey, Jenkins, I need your help because I know you know how to say it. Ugalalali.
Okay, Uigangalele.
Uigangalele. If Uigangalele is not playing that game and Lawrence is, then the Clemson Tigers defeat Notre Dame. But because of that, and again, that's nothing that Dabo Swinney can prevent, he now finds himself with the loss, and the only way that Clemson can get back to a college football playoff is if they beat Notre Dame in the ACC championship. So this is such a different wrinkle that's been added to not only collegiate sports, but professional sports that has changed the outcome of games you never would have been expected to.
Yeah, and this game has no bearing on the college football playoff this weekend. But to your point, if Felipe Franks is out this weekend, you don't feel good about Arkansas's chances to win the game. So, I mean, that's... To what Trevor Lawrence means to his team, Felipe Franks is equally as important to Arkansas's team.
I would argue more. Like DJ Uiagalelei, I mean, because of how talented their backup quarterback is, I think there's you still have a lot
I
of questions.
More with some of that.
You still have question marks about KJ Jefferson and Malik Hornsby coming in and playing an entire football game. And I mean, they're just more DJ's more talented than both KJ and Malik. And even as good as Trevor Lawrence is, I think the disparity between those two guys is different. I think with Felipe and KJ and Malik, it's far more, there's far more of a gap. I don't know if it's Grand Canyon, but there's far more of a gap.
I wouldn't put my gloves way up on that. So I think you have a good point there.
No, but luckily, reportedly, he has not been affected or anything, knock on wood, as far as that goes. But you need all hands on decks for Saturday, even though LSU is down in the dumps. They're trying to get geared up. Terrence Marshall, who's one of their star wide receivers, they held a players-only meeting trying to revive this team and get them going for the latter half of their football season.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
Does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Now, on the more lighthearted side of things, Eric Musselman posted a letter from his mother talking about the red-white game last week, and her mom ended up watching the event. Here are some of her takes on that. She said the transition D needs improvement. She said to try and focus on the task at hand because she didn't like how her son Eric was yelling at the reporter. And then she says that...
He's yelling at his kids while talking to the reporter.
While talking to the reporter. Yeah. She also said that his team played hard, just like in a reminder of her father's. And she also wanted to remind every single one of the basketball team members to eat their vegetables.
I don't know if this letter was... designed just to get some conversation going, but it's well done, and I hope mom's doing well out there. I looked up where Bird Rock Beach and Tennis Club might be. I couldn't find it exactly, but Bird Rock is a part of San Diego and that area out in La Jolla. So look beautiful. Look like a place we'd like to hang out
for
in
week.
Southern California for a week or a weekend or forever. You know, so I mean. So I hope Miss Musselman's doing well out there in Cali.
Found that kind of funny. This was sent to us yesterday. The Arkansas Razorbacks registered record-breaking graduation success rate of 85%. Last year was 84. It's 85. Does this do anything for you? Do you care about this whatsoever? Because I don't.
You don't care about it unless it's really low. If it's really high.
Your APR sucks. Yeah.
You don't care about it unless it's going to cost you postseason opportunities or scholarships. And that's the only time you really care about this. We should care about it more, but we don't.
Doesn't move the needle.
No.
Some bad news that also we got yesterday is Michael Qualls, former Arkansas Razorback, his apartment burned down. There was an interesting story. I actually donated to the GoFundMe account yesterday that they woke up, him and his girlfriend and his daughter woke up to a fire, and they had to jump out of the apartment building. So a scary situation for Michael and his family, and luckily he's okay. There was no terrible injuries or anything, but if you wanted, there's a GoFundMe account going on right now, and I would encourage all, if you have the spare money, to help reach out and donate to a possible, but just a scary situation for a former Razorback. That's a frightening deal for you and your family if that was ever to occur.
Right here as we're beginning the holiday season, and it's the most unusual holiday season any of us have went into, and anytime you have some kind of tragedy in your life, you know, it's I think it's just a little harder to cope with when you're heading into Thanksgiving, the holidays. So, you know, the best to Michael and his family.
Two more fun ones before we get into your favorite Arkansas LSU memory. Are you a Fight Club fan?
I've seen the movie. I'm not a huge fan of Fight Club.
Okay. So, well,
if that's what you're referring to.
Yes. Yeah. Well, this is, and this occasionally, I feel like a story breaks out like this every 6 months, every year or so. The cops apparently had to break up an illegal New York City Fight Club. Now, I've never had the desire to join
one of
these.
Okay, where are the legal New York City Fight Clubs?
That's a great question. So, I've never understood the desire and philosophy to get my face beaten and bludgeoned every single week.
Some people are, what was your phrase? Just built different. Some built different.
I guess they're built different.
Some people are built different and just need to test their toughness. Test their type A, test their alpha male a little more than others. And I think that's where you get the Fight Club element.
And I'm not condoning financial errors. Sometimes someone needs to get whacked, and I'm not talking about get whacked like killed, but like get beaten around a little bit if they're toeing the line or whatever. But yeah. I just
Jenkins
like you
has said that about you once or
has
twice.
Has he? Yeah. Okay. Well, luckily
I've fended him off of you a few
has
times.
He?
Kept
he
it
couldn't
from happening.
He couldn't catch me. Now if he landed one, that would be tough, but he couldn't catch me.
That would be
the key part of that whole thing.
If I catch you though.
If you ever did.
Like I said, it would be done. But
you got curtains.
Yeah, that's the way to put it. Last quick hitting headline. This I found a little interesting. Gluten-free Oreos are coming out in 2021. And yes, there's a double stuff version. Will you try them?
What's the point? I mean, gluten-free is not a diet, by the way. I mean, it is a diet because if you have indigestion or if you have digestion issues, like, you know, if you have IBS or Crohn's or something, you know, gluten-free may help that. But gluten-free is not like a weight loss program. Gluten-free just helps with your digestion.
So my little sister and my aunt are both gluten-free, not because of choice, but because of they have to. Or something.
Right. I've got some family members, and there's times where my wife has even struggled and felt better when not eating gluten. I've got several family members that go gluten-free because they just feel better. It's not a weight loss thing.
See,
so if you're going to eat unless you need to be gluten-free to not have tummy trouble, why would you eat a gluten-free Oreo?
And that's the question I have. And their diabetes runs in my family. My grandpa had it. My dad had it. I hope it skips a generation. And you've seen the way I eat, and I'm probably I do exercise. I do drink a lot of water, but it can only do so much with the pellets that I consume. And to me, if I eventually get that, I'm going to have to change my eating habits. But I'm not going to change the way, I absolutely eat every single day throughout the week. My thing is I eat healthy during the week, and I eat like crap on the weekends. But unless it's physically affecting my health, I want to eat good food. And again, you're saying, I get the gluten-free aspect if you have to, but I'm not going to openly go vegan, openly go gluten-free, do the keto diet or whatever.
You know what gluten is? Or do you just know the term?
It's in like corn, high fructose corn syrup, where no one knows what it is.
No. It's part of wheat. You know, it's part of the flour.
Okay.
No, don't confuse it with like sugar. Fructose corn is more like the sugary side of it.
I'm just saying, like, no one actually knows what it is.
No. And I think people know exactly what it is.
Well, I don't know what it is.
Okay,
now I do.
There you go.
So it's in flour. So in a lot of what you're saying, it's in a lot of good food. So that's going to be hard to avoid. So, but
it is tied to carbs, but. Yeah, I mean, if we're going to eat an Oreo, let's just eat an Oreo.
Do the whole thing.
Now, I mean, there's a lot of things gluten-free that taste fine. There are some things that, you know, you just throw them straight in the trash that are gluten-free.
Okay.
Because my wife has dabbled some in the gluten-free diet, and there's some things that are tolerable. My mother-in-law has gluten-free items that she prefers because it helps her. And there are some things that are tolerable, and then there are some things, like if they come out on a cookie sheet, throw the item in the trash and eat the cookie sheet, you know.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
So, all right, that's going to close out our quick hitting headlines. Time to dive into the Arkansas-LSU conversation. Your favorite Arkansas-LSU memory, game, interview, play, what is it? 877-377-6963. First question goes to David in South Arkansas. David, you're on the Morning Rush.
Good morning, gentlemen. I guess several memories, if I may. One, I was at that game in Little Rock, the Miracle on Markham. I was sitting kind of on the goal line on the other side of the stadium, and just the joyous pandemonium that was going on.
The 41-yard line of LSU. There's the snap. Jones looking. Jones now throwing to the end zone, and it is complete!
David, I figured you'd probably want to hear it again for you.
Oh, that was beautiful, beautiful. But what a lot of people don't realize, the extra point was moved back because of the celebrating. It's like, God, please make that sucker. And I've been to several games down at Baton Rouge, and the fans, LSU fans, are wonderful people. That's a great, great stadium to see a game because you're they're into kind. The game. Yeah. They're knowledgeable, but during the game, the royal jerks, I'll say that. But one of the greatest memories, one tailgated, we had a wonderful Cajun gentleman named Seymour Lafarge who cooked up some of the best food I've ever had in my life. And have you guys ever had Nutra? Do you know what Nutra is?
I have not had Nutra.
That is not an unfamiliar. Tell me more, because I think I have.
If you look at it, it's basically a giant big water wrap, and he even had some of that soaked up in barbecue sauce, and I had no clue what it was, but he grilled that up, and we're eating away. He said, you know what you're eating? I'm like, I haven't got a clue. He explained it, and I'll tell you what, with enough beer and barbecue sauce, the Cajuns can make anything edible, anything edible. But that was certainly a wonderful memory, just the food, the wonderful tailgating, the atmosphere of the game was horrible. We did lose that game. I do know that. But just a couple of memories, and I do hope we do a curb stomping on them Saturday. That will be just a wonderful, wonderful experience. Thank you, gentlemen.
David, appreciate the call. And I have my roommate has been to Baton Rouge two of the last 3 years when he's gone down, and he has said the food down there is the best he's ever had.
I mean, of all the cuisines, Italian, American cuisine with a big fat filet mignon, or, you know, pick one, Asian food. Is there anything better, though, than the Cajun? Because it just kind of blends them all,
it's
right?
It's hard to eat. It's very hard to
it's
beat.
It's just hard to beat really good, well-prepared Cajun cuisine.
I had the opportunity following graduation to go to New Orleans, and the food we had down there was unbelievable. I did not partake in a beignet from Cafe Du Monde.
The line's too long.
Yeah, my buddies went. Half our group went. Yeah. Half our group went somewhere else. But the food we had down there was unbelievable. Loved every bit of it. All right,
I've been three times to New Orleans. Not standing in the line. I mean, it's a tourist trap. I mean, I'm sure they're great. There's other places to get beignets. They're not Cafe Du Monde. I understand that's the brand, but yeah, I only have a limited amount of time. While I'm there, I'm not spending an hour of it in line.
In line. No, I completely understand that. We're going,
'cause to me, New Orleans and Vegas are a lot alike.
We're going back for a bachelor party.
Got 3 days, and I got to get out of town.
Get out of it, yeah. We're going back for a bachelor party. We're going to have a big butt beer, a hurricane, a shark tank. There's a lot of food and drinks that we will be partaking in.
Got to go to Mama's down. To get a po' boy.
We did have one of those as well. All right, back to the phone lines. We'll go up to Fayetteville, welcoming Tim to the conversation. Tim, what is your favorite Arkansas LSU memory?
Well, the one that sticks out in my mind is always is basketball. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was Al Dillard. They went down to LSU with Nolan Richardson, and it was coming down to the wire, and he put, I believe it was Al Dillard in, and he hit a buzzer beater, and that place was so loud. When he hit that shot, you could hear a pin drop, and they won it. But that one always sticks out in my mind.
Yeah, Tim, there's some good basketball. Yeah, absolutely, man. And it's interesting you bring up basketball, because you think about some of the Indians on the basketball court. You think about Oliver Miller blocking Shaquille O'Neal, the Razorbacks winning in overtime. You think about I think it was Keith Hornsby that came into Bud Walton Arena, hit that game winner over Michael Qualls to win it for LSU. I mean, there's been some really good basketball games. Now, I initially jumped to all football memories, but Tim, you're exactly right. There's been some good basketball finishes as well.
Yeah, I don't know. This must be the game Tim's talking about. I just pulled the media guide out in the national championship season when Arkansas went to LSU, and Arkansas was ranked number one. LSU was unranked. It was 108-105. In overtime. So I assume that's the game he was referring, but I don't remember the ending to that. But That was a heck of a ball game that year that Arkansas won at all.
Dale Brown and Nolan Richardson had some classic battles back in the day. They were some fun matchups, and you think about some of the great players. I mentioned Shaquille O'Neal. We know the legendary players that have played for the Arkansas Razorbacks, and there's no need to even categorize them, but it's pretty cool to see that this rivalry not only transcends it. I mean, if you want to touch on baseball, baseball's been the same thing. For the longest time, since 2011, Arkansas could not beat LSU in a series. You beat them the first game. You beat them the second game. You couldn't beat them in the third game. You were finally able to overcome that. Was it, I think it was 2 years ago, right, if I remember that correctly. And so since then, I mean, there's just this rivalry. It's not necessarily Bedlam, OU, Oklahoma State, where it's treated like a massive rivalry, but there in the basketball, football, and baseball, there are some good rivalries. All right, let's go to Little Rock. Let's go to the capital city. Welcome in David. David, you were on the Morning Rush, man.
All right. Yeah, I wanted to talk about 2008, when Casey Dick threw the touchdown pass to Lennon Crawford.
Let's go and play that for you real quick.
It's great to have a senior quarterback in here. He's not panicking. Most important thing is to get the first down. Don't worry about the clock. Just get the right play call.
He's less than a yard. He's going for it all. He's got a receiver in the end zone. It is caught by Arkansas. Lennon Crawford comes down with the ball. And with 21 seconds left to play, the extra point will probably give Arkansas a win.
Well, David, we did know that it gave Arkansas a win, and Miracle on Markham 2, I was in attendance for, man. What a memory.
It was a great memory, and for my family especially. So I had my four sons there at the game, and it sounded like everybody in the stadium there was cheering at that point when we won the game. But there was one little boy that wasn't. My son Zach had an LSU shirt on, and I had told him before the game, because we're all Razorback fans. I told him before the game, I said, look, if we win, which we weren't going to win, then you've got to convert to be a Razorback fan. So when Lennon Crawford won the game, Zach was over there crying. Of course, my other three boys have their Razorback shirts on, and they're freaking out. And, you know, it's just a fun memory. Long story short, now Zach's playing baseball for the Razorbacks. So we converted.
Great.
You know who this is, Tommy, right? That story just something. This is David White. This is John David's dad and Zach White's dad.
So
I remember that.
How did you raise three sons that were Razorback fans and one that was an LSU? I got to hear this story. How did
Zach has his own mind, still does, but I don't know. He just had weird taste in teams. He loved the Minnesota Vikings growing up, even though we were all Dallas Cowboy fans. The one sports team that he loved, that we all loved, he was a Cardinals fan in baseball, so that was good. But when he was little, I guess 2008, he was only 6 years old, so he just, for whatever reason, he loved those LSU Tigers. But after that day, he converted against his will.
Yeah, and I guess they had counseling back then for things like being an LSU fan, did they? pediatric counseling for LSU fans, I guess. Oh, well, yeah, that's a great story right there.
Oh, yeah, man. Well, Dave, it's good to hear from you.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Well, yeah, good to hear, talk to you. But we used to go to all the War Memorial games back in the good old days when they had them, and we'd set up shop outside the stadium and cook cheeseburgers right before the game. And I think Ty ate a few of those, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. I managed to scarf down a few of those.
Some things haven't changed, David. I cook cheeseburgers, and he scarfs down a few still.
Yeah, I hear you. Listen, y'all have a great day, man. Fun to talk to you.
Thank you for the call.
Absolutely. So, a little backstory on that. That is David White, the father of John David White, Zach White. John David is a football player on the University of Arkansas. Zach is now a baseball player at the University of Arkansas. His son Cooper, I think, is a senior now at Pulaski Academy, one of the better wide receivers on the team. And then his son Walker is the starting, or I think he was ninth grade starting quarterback for Little Rock Christian. But
you may know, I should have. There was a pretty good amateur golfer from Little Rock named David White. Is that one and the same?
That's David. David has
I remember watching him when I was, a teenager, and he's a little bit older than me, and he could hit a golf ball pretty good.
He can smash a golf
ball. I remember seeing him on over here in the River Valley area play some ASGA events, and he can flat play.
So, and it's funny David brings that up, because I remember I remember the specific game because of the memory itself, beating LSU, but I do remember Zach sporting the LSU Tigers jersey or shirt that day. And so next time I saw Zach at a basketball game this past year. Next time I see him, I'm going to give him a hard time about that. But fun memories growing up with my dad and my brother going with the White family. Yeah. Now I would say that you mentioned David's prowess on the golf course. I would say the athletic lineage of, because he's also the, let me think, he's the, I think John Aaron, trying to remember the lineage on this. John Aaron Reese, who played on the 1964 National Championship game team, that's, I think, David's, if I'm trying to remember this, David's son-in-law or son. There's a connection there that I'm forgetting, but there's a lot of athletic stuff. And so I'm gonna I got to give my dad a hard time about this. I was like, why didn't you pass any of this thing on to my brother and I? Where's our athleticism, Dad? Yeah. But yeah, definitely a cool memory. And going up to Little Rock Games was definitely one of the better memories of my entire life in my childhood.
What
for sure.
I took out all that is you've been freeloading on cheeseburgers for a long time.
Listen, my dad, David White, Chris Servillo, they'd cook them. And
you'd eat them.
And I eat me, my brother, and the White boys would eat them. So that's they put them up, and I put them down. So, all right, back to the phone lines. Welcoming in Rod on I-40. Rod, you're on the Morning Rush, man.
Good morning, Ty. How y'all doing?
Man, we are great. We're rehashing some of these incredible Arkansas LSU memories this morning.
We're strolling memory lane this morning.
I'm thinking Matt Jones right now. But Matt Jones did a number on him. But, yeah, I mean, you guys were talking about gluten a while ago, and that's an interesting. We have lots of bakeries all over the United States, and we have some bakeries that all they run is gluten-free product because it permeates the entire loaf. It gets in that pan. You got to wash that pan and sanitize it. We can run regular bread or vice versa. Gluten's a binder. It's an emulsifier. It holds everything together. And I tried gluten-free one time out of our bakery, Denver. That stuff is nasty. I know people can't stand gluten. It's a binder. I mean, you can imagine what that does to your system. And some people just react badly to it.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
Drives it to him. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
As we bring in former Razorback and Super Bowl champion Brett Good of Henderson Phillips Solutions into the conversation. Brett, this is a unique game for Arkansas and LSU because you think back to last season. This is the highest change in the history of college football betting lines, according to Brett McMurphy, from at one point in time being 42-point favorites for LSU to Arkansas being 3-point favorites a year later. And that just really tells the story of 2020, doesn't it?
It does. That's all that stat, and I was like, wow, that's crazy. Because, you know, a lot of people preseason still had LSU being good and Arkansas not winning a game, and now we get to this point in the season, and it's a big 40-point swing on the point difference, and it just shows that they may preseason have the better players, but playing as a team, Arkansas seems to be doing that better, and I think they've shown that consistently. So hopefully they can kind of bounce back after the loss and go out there and try and get a win.
Brett, I've had conversations with Marcus Spears, Jacob Hester, Matt Moscona, who does radio in Baton Rouge, and they feel like this rivalry has kind of dwindled and died a little bit. So from your perspective as a guy that's played in this rivalry, how important of a game was it as an Arkansas Razorback football player?
Well, it was huge whenever I was playing because you had to beat them or Alabama to win the SEC West, and that was the top of the SEC, and you had to go do that. Now I would agree the rivalry is kind of dead. Arkansas hasn't won a whole lot of these games, and I'm sure LSU doesn't really care a whole lot about, I mean, they want to win, but the boot doesn't mean as much to them as it probably would Arkansas this game because they've won it so many years in a row. And to create that rivalry, we've got to go out there and start winning these type of ball games and keep that trophy for more than 1 year.
You know, for Arkansas, you got to win this one to, you know, keep the chance alive, for a winning season, which probably isn't going to happen with Alabama still on your schedule. But for LSU, it feels like this is a breaking point just to salvage your season. It feels like with everything going on around their program this week off the field and the USA Today report, a win is what they need this week to really kind of just salvage things with the LSU program that's just been in shambles compared to last year. I've made the point this week, Brett, that this is a matchup of two programs that couldn't be more juxtaposed this year when comparing national champion a year ago that's now 2-3 versus a team that didn't win more than two games the last 2 years in Arkansas, that both of these programs seem to be going more in opposite directions than any other two programs in Power 5 football right now.
I couldn't agree with you more, and that's what's crazy about it is, you know, you're coming off a national championship team, and then they don't get to celebrate. I remember it's kind of like the lockout year when we won the Super Bowl. We didn't get to really celebrate with the team because we were locked out. So that's kind of where LSU, they spent the whole offseason. They didn't get to do a whole lot of functions as a team because of coronavirus. And now they've all come together and you realize that they're losing games. So what happens with teams like that is they start pointing the finger. They start getting fights. So you wonder, is there trouble in the locker room? And then Arkansas, you give credit to the coaching staff and to the senior leadership that's there. You say, wow, they've come together and they're putting this thing, you know, in play. And I heard your stat right before about the turnover margin. You know, that's huge. Things that Arkansas hasn't been doing in many years consistently, we're doing this year. And I think if both kind of keep going on the trend, I think, you know, if that happens for the next couple of years, then Arkansas obviously goes up that totem pole, and then you start talking about actually competing for SEC West championships.
I mentioned the USA Today report that's been circulating and swirling around the LSU athletic department this week. For a football team, when you have a story and a cloud hanging over your program like that during a game week, how hard is it to block that out from being a distraction from your game preparations?
It's really hard, and some people don't read it at all, but unfortunately with Twitter and Facebook and everything that's out there, people are constantly on their phone, and so they're seeing all this information, and a lot of guys either get their feelings hurt or they get upset, but then some guys just get mad and it makes them focus more, and then they really want to hone in to do their job. But a team like LSU, we got to remember, they're still coming. Most of those guys are still on that team that came off that championship game last year, so they played in big-time ball games. They know what they're doing. Now, obviously, the makeup's a little bit different this year, but there's still a lot of good football players on that team, and so they're not taking the media. What they're saying is honest, because you either believe them when they say you're going to go back out and be competitive this year, or you don't believe them when they tell you that you're awful. So you've got to kind of take the media for what it is when they start dogging a team with a team that just came off a national title, because they're still a good football team. They're in a really interesting year with COVID, new coaching staffs outside the head coach. They've really mixed up the whole program, and they've got to find some senior leadership. So I think that they'll take a step forward, but they'll try not to read those articles.
Former Razorback, former Green Bay Packer, now part of the Henderson Phillips Solutions team, Brett Good with us on the Morning Rush. Brett, you got to play in this series. I wonder from your perspective, either the game or two that you played in, or just from a fan perspective, what is your favorite Arkansas LSU memory?
Well, unfortunately, when I was playing, we kind of struggled against them, but I enjoyed the game in Little Rock, and then after I was done the game, watching them go three overtimes and win that down there in LSU. So those two are my top two. Probably I would say the latter was beating them in LSU in that atmosphere with a lot of guys that I had just, you know, got through playing with the year before at Arkansas, and getting to see those friends actually go out there and be able to bring that boot home. That was very memorable for me.
Brett, you mentioned the Little Rock game in 2006. I was in attendance for that one, and I remember when Darren went 80 yards just right up the gut and outraced the LSU safety, only to see Trendon Holiday take that kickoff return back to the house. How much of a dejection play was that to see LSU score on special teams one play later after Darren goes 80?
It's really hard to do it. And that just kills your team. You know, that you're riding high and the emotions are going there, and you've got the momentum. You're going that way. You're playing at home, you know, Little Rock rocking, and then they do that and it just shuts everything down, and it just puts back in reality that maybe they are who they are, you know, being a better football team. And unfortunately, that's what happens a lot of times in football.
Brett Good with us here on the Morning Rush. Let's talk some special teams. Devion Warren, unfortunately, going to be lost for the year with an ACL tear. He's one of your kick returners. How do you think Arkansas will approach the return game? You've got Burke still back there, and certainly when it comes to the punt game, you want to look at that. But with Warren out, how would you approach the return game now?
I think it's next man up. I think that you sit there and somebody's got to pop up there and go. I mean, you see across the board, a lot of teams have to deal with returners. It's unfortunately, you know, knee injury that comes to it, but we've got to have somebody step in there. And I think that Fountain will have a good game plan and try and make it beneficial for us to be able to be able to be productive in a game like this where we need our special teams to come through.
Now, Arkansas got a chance to return kickoffs quite a bit last week, unfortunately, against Florida. But one thing that kind of stood out to me is it seemed like there was a few more holding calls on returns last week with special teams. What stood out to you, and did those holding calls, did anything jump off the screen to you when watching those plays?
So the holding calls are a killer on special teams. And like you said, we returned a lot of kickoff returns, not very many punts, which means we're not doing very good in the ball game. But to see a guy get a holding call on special teams, what happens is, and you know this, he loses position and he keeps holding on. And, you know, and his feet get out of line and they keep trying to go. And there's so many different tricks and techniques that they can do to keep from getting those holding calls. And you just kind of want to hit the guy square in the chest if you can't. You know, your returner's got to make somebody miss for you to have an explosive play. Anytime you see these guys score a touchdown, whether it be college or NFL, they're still making a guy miss. You'll see right at the point of attack, somebody's missed the block or they let somebody go free, and that guy makes a good move on the play and then takes it to the house. So we've got to keep our hands inside, and when you start to lose that leverage on the guy, we've got to let go, because if we can just gain 10 more yards instead of going backwards 20, that's going to help us out in the long run.
If their feet are beat, they're going to cheat. Isn't that the old adage?
That's it. That's right.
Yeah.
Brett Good, former Razorback, with us here on the Morning Rush. Brett, as we get ready for this LSU game, there's not a lot of good things that come out of Louisiana, but one of the good things is food. And the Cajun cuisine that comes out of either New Orleans, Baton Rouge, or one of the Cajun towns there is spectacular. If you had to pinpoint one particular Cajun food, whether it's gumbo, whether it's just any assortment, beignets, jambalaya, what's your go-to Cajun food?
I love some crawfish etouffee. But we also had this in Green Bay. They got these pies shipped in. They were mini pies, and they were crawfish etouffee pies. And you just pick it up and go. And it was absolutely delicious. And every time we went down there, especially in NFL playing that, I mean, we got to go out to eat, and it was a ball, because you got to eat some local restaurants that – you never get to touch anywhere else in the world except right there, and then they do have some really good food. I don't know about eating the rat that y'all were talking about earlier.
No, I can
eat a lot of other stuff.
Yeah, the blackened, if you go down there, one of the things you got to try is the blackened redfish, which redfish, of course, is known for that part of the country. But the blackened redfish or the redfish etouffee is just unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, Brett, you mentioned the crawfish etouffee. That is definitely on my list as well. There's some big NFL news this week, Brett, and I don't know if you guys were teammates or not, or if y'all missed. I think you guys were, and forgive me if I'm mispronouncing his name, David Bacchiarti?
Bacchiari.
Highest paid.
I don't know which one of you two are right.
Highest paid ever offensive lineman. What did you think about him getting upwards of 20-something million a year as an offensive lineman, man?
I'm super happy for David. You know, if you look at a picture from him in college, Colorado, to where he has come now, and he really is solidified himself as one of the best left tackles in the game. And when you get that and you're protecting a quarterback of Aaron's, you know, tenure and the price that they pay Aaron, you've got to protect him. And so you've seen that with Jason Peters, that, you know, playing left tackle forever. And David is a great player, but he's an even better human being. And so I'm happy for him. And it's just great to see that you guys get paid like that.
Made you wish you were about 4 inches taller and 50 pounds heavier, didn't it?
Yeah, I had to be about 15 years younger, too.
Yeah, that's true.
let's see. So we're about, week 10 of the NFL season? Wait, it's week 9 or 10. Just, I know your Packers got a big win over the Jacksonville Jaguars, almost squeaked it out. Aaron Rodgers is Aaron Rodgers, man. But when you're looking at the rest of the way, when you're looking at Super Bowl contenders, Packers, Seahawks, Bills have kind of inched in that category. We got to mention the Kansas City Chiefs. There's probably a name or two I'm not listing that someone's going to yell at me about. Is there anyone that you think solidified? Steelers. Can't forget Phil Steelers. Is there anyone that has kind of made your opinion of them change in the last week or so, where you think they're much more of a Super Bowl contender than they were a couple of weeks ago?
Well, I'll tell you who I've taken off the board is the Saints, with seeing what Drew Brees did. But I definitely would add the Bills into that. It's going to be – everything looks like it's going to run through Pittsburgh. You know, the Steelers being as good as they are right now, and they're playing consistent football, and they've always had a good defense. I'm kind of not impressed with Baltimore, just the fact that they're not keeping up with everybody. Lamar seems to be confused out there. Obviously, like you said, Kansas City is a big-time contender. And I think now in the NFC, you know, it's which Tampa Bay Buccaneers team are you going to get? I think the Packers are playing the most consistently outside of the one game they played against Tampa Bay. They're sitting at 7-2. Then you've got the Bears, Minnesota. What comes out of that division? Well, the Bears started off 5-0. And you got to. The reason I'm saying this is because you're adding an extra playoff team. Bears started off 5-0. Now they're on a big time losing streak, and Minnesota's back in the mix because they're running the football, and you know their defense has always been good. So I think it's going to come down to the wire, but I think things are going to be interesting this year because of the added team to the playoff to see how the whole mix up comes through.
All right, gut feeling on the Hogs and LSU this weekend.
I say Hogs by 10.
Okay. All right. Brett's part of the team at Henderson Phillips Employer Solutions. If you are the person that deals with the employee benefits, 401k, any of the retirement plans, health insurance, that's part of your work at your work, staffing management solutions. Brett may have to explain what that is, but I know you've got some tools to help people with that, commercial and personal insurance. If any of that's on your menu, Brett, you can help them with that.
That's right. We can help anything along that line. We do payroll. We can help with if you're not an HR guy and you need some HR help, we offer that for companies that can't afford it. And we just try to kind of go the whole list that we can help out businesses and try and work, have a long-term relationship with you. So we can handle it from A to Z.
All right, Northwest Arkansas, River Valley, or really anywhere you're listening, you can call or text Brett. Here's his cell phone number, 479-651-2292. That's 651-2292, so you can call him directly at that number for any of your insurance or employee benefit needs. 651-2292 for Brett Goode with Henderson Phillips Employer Solutions. All right, buddy, have a good rest of your week. We'll talk to you next Wednesday.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, guys. Go home.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
A bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time, we're coming for the whole damn thing.
Let's welcome in Kevin McPherson in the conversation. Covers Arkansas basketball for Pig Trail Nation, Hogville. Kevin, good morning. I want to start with the Philadelphia 76ers, and there's been some comments made by Kendrick Perkins, former Boston Celtic. He was a part of the Oklahoma City Thunder and some other basketball teams. He is very high on Mr. Mason Jones and is urging the 76ers to select him with the 21st pick in the first round. What are your thoughts on Mason Jones potentially ending up on Daryl Morey's new team?
Wow. I mean, first of all, to land in the first round, who would have ever dreamed Mason Jones coming out of Connor State JUCO a couple of years ago would be, finding his way into the first round of the NBA draft that quickly, if ever. You know, he had one more season of eligibility. Mason Jones is a guy that has continued to raise the bar on expectations. He's bet on himself. He believes in himself. You know, the whole Breakfast Club last year in year one of Eric Musselman, the transformation with his body, doing what he did in the SEC, that was a once-in-a-generation kind of season. When you look at 9 30-point games, a couple of 40-plus, leading the leading scoring, leading the nation in free throws attempted, transition. I mean, here's a guy that, you know, really Arkansas's had some great players, but his co-SEC player of the year came with being the first Razorback ever to lead the league in scoring. And then he had a really big combine workout just a couple of weeks ago where he put up some of the best numbers when they compared combine numbers. Was done a little differently this year. Obviously, they didn't bring everybody to one place. People did it at various NBA city sites as part of that pandemic response. But I think Mason Jones is a guy that's been really mostly in the conversation, guys, for middle second round, maybe early second round, maybe late second round, first round. That means there's a team that believes, and, you know, Philadelphia's got pieces. We know that. We know what they've got. We'll see what they do to rebuild. But Mason Jones is a guy that's an alpha. And I know there are NBA teams, and I talk to scouts who tell me, we love guys who believe in themselves and have that little cocky edge. That's Mason Jones.
And I think what's interesting about the Philadelphia 76ers is not only has Mason Jones been linked to that organization, but also Isaiah Joe. One of the rumors circling within an NBA draft circles is that the 76ers have told him they're going to try and get him in the 21st pick or the 34th pick. So I'm wondering from your perspective, you mentioned some of the pieces that Philadelphia has, Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons. Who do you think is a better fit for Philly? Is it Mason Jones or is it Isaiah Joe?
You know, that's a great question. I think it's Isaiah Joe, and the only reason I say that is Ben Simmons is a ball-dominant guy, but he's not a shooter. Joel Embiid is a big man that is a more traditional. Now, he'll step out and knock some mid-range. They need a safety valve. They need a guy that when Ben Simmons drives, he can kick. If he can't finish or get it to Joel, someone that can just set up and get into a three shot. Plus, Isaiah Joe is a better defender. He's more of that 3-and-D type of prototypical present and future NBA guy. No knock on Mason Jones. Some things are better fits. Now, that's not to say if the Sixers went and got Mason Jones that it wouldn't work out there. I just think when I look at the pieces, when you look at the two, basically the star power they already have, a guy like Isaiah Joe makes sense to me. You know, you think about teams like Houston and Golden State and some of the other ones where they've got playing five out and really spacing the floor and getting a lot of threes up. He's a guy that really, when you think about it, no matter how teams get it done, Philadelphia, again, less perimeter, but maybe trying to get some pieces to help him have that strike ability from deep range. A guy like Isaiah Joe fits anywhere in this league, and I think Mason Jones is a guy that's going to surprise people. I really do. If he ends up being a middle to late second-round pick, I think eventually we're going to look at him as a guy that maybe should have gone in that first round if he doesn't.
Kevin, how much gamesmanship goes on with the NBA draft compared to like the NFL draft, where GMs and coaches and owners will say one thing when they don't really mean it because they want to throw other teams kind of off the trail a little bit? Does that go on much with the NBA? Or, you know, we see that because we follow maybe the NFL draft a little bit more. Give us some insight on how the NBA really kind of goes about the business of the draft when it comes to the gamesmanship side of it.
Yeah, that's part of it. The other thing is there's gamesmanship, but there's also, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 guys that teams are talking to saying, hey, we've got these picks and we like you for this spot. Well, they don't just like one guy. They like multiple guys. And the reason that is because things change in the draft. Teams trade, draft positions change for a team that maybe is not trading because someone traded ahead of them. And now there's a different order of things. And so I don't know, that part is not as much gamesmanship as it is on the, you know, it's at the, obviously the benefit of the player and his representation to understand that those things are going to happen. So they might feel comfortable. They might feel like a team really likes them, but things can change. So there's gamesmanship, but there's also so many moving pieces, and guys fall on draft boards or guys fall on the draft when it actually gets here. And now things change for teams that you thought loaded up and were going to get you. So you got to understand it's advantageous. Obviously, if you can be a lottery pick, sure. Those things are pretty, they're not completely static, but they're pretty well known. And once you get outside of that and start moving down to that late first round, sometimes early second round picks are just, some of those are viewed because of the guaranteed money to be better than a late first round pick because you don't lose that much money, but you have a lot more negotiating power at the end of the guaranteed part of the contract. And so there's even cases where guys go undrafted and it ends up working out better for them than maybe had they been drafted. So everybody wants to get drafted, but there's so many things going on. But the gamesmanship part, of course that happens. I know that there are teams that are telling people, you know, don't tell anybody that we're, but they want it to kind of get out. They get it through their local media. Mm-hmm. They'll pump local media to talk about a guy and say that this might be a guy that someone's interested in. They want that out there. So there is gamesmanship, a little show and tell, a little okie doke that goes on in all professional sports.
How deep is a team's board when you look at just a 2-round draft and a team may have a third pick or something due to a trade, but you know, you don't have the number of picks you would have certainly in baseball or even in football with 7 rounds. I mean, How deep are you prepared to evaluate and be ready to go through your draft selections when you know you're only going to have, in theory, say, 2 picks?
That's a great question. It's probably different for every team, but you know, we use the example of Philadelphia with the 21, 34, and 36. Let's just say that those are the only 3 picks. Now, they've got all kinds of considerations with trades and things that could help them improve what they want to do. But for each of those spots, I've got to think that they're looking at players that could be 5 to 7 picks sooner than their pick, mm-hmm. but could fall, and maybe 5 or 7 in the range at their pick or later. So probably per pick, you know, the neighborhood of 8 to 10 players that might be available to them per pick. Well, when you're at 34 and 36, that's probably the same 8 to 10 guys. But I think there's a lot that goes into it. And, of course, they'll have a board for at least 50 players overall. But when they try to drill it down for specifics, I think you still have to look at a lot of guys, interview a lot of guys, because you don't, you know, it's already a guessing game once you get past certain guys. I mean, this year there's not a Zion Williamson in the draft. And even he mm-hmm. had some question marks and still does because of injuries. I'm just saying I think that there's a lot that goes into it, and there's a lot of players on those boards. Even when they try to get close to draft day, there's still a lot to consider.
Yeah, James Wiseman, Anthony Edwards, Obi Toppin. You're really curious to see who goes number one overall tonight. Kevin McPherson with us on the Morning Rush. Kevin, let's talk about this Arkansas basketball team. Next week, first game, 7 days out. I wonder your opinion. I've been asked several times by different listeners, hey, Ty, what do you think the starting roster is going to be? What do you think the starting roster is going to be? And the only one that I'm really solidified on is that Moses Moody is going to start. If you had to pick out your starting five right now, Kevin, who would those five be?
Well, I'm going to give you my starting five. Well, it's Justin Smith and Moses Moody. I've got those guys entrenched in that five. You know, they'll have to do something to prove me wrong, but those guys are, to me, are day one, everyday starters. And from there, you know, I'm really looking I'm going to throw maybe a curveball or two in here. I'm going to put Desi Sills. This isn't a curveball. I'm going to put him in the starting lineup. He's a guy I think that can play that six-man role, but I'm going to start the season out with him. So I think that's, you know, so that's three for me. And then I'm going to do an or thing. Jalen Tate, I think, is the guy that's going to start. For me, it might be K.K. Robinson. So either one of those guys, probably going to see Jalen Tate, the senior grad transfer from Northern Kentucky. He had a good red-white game, by the way, as did K.K. And then at the next spot, and I'm going to call it the five spot, you could go. We'll probably see Vance Jackson Jr. on opening night. But for me, it's Jalen Williams. So, you know, I've got three freshmen in my starting lineup effectively. K.K. Robinson, Moses Moody, Jalen Williams, along with Justin Smith and Desi Sills.
Okay, that's interesting. And I wonder, like, I was curious with the freshmen coming in, who would play, who would not. And I know Connor Vanover's dealt with some injury concerns and stuff. But to me, K.K. Robinson, watching him play against collegiate competition, I know it's just the red-white game, but Kevin, that guy can jump out of the gym and he gets after you defensively. I think of all the guys we were looking to, he might be the one that has the most to gain out of the freshman season that I think most people will be surprised by watching this upcoming college basketball season.
Yeah, the first time I saw KK play was in person for he was a ninth grader, was a senior, a varsity game, and it was his first game of the season, so his first game as a varsity basketball player in high school. About two or three trips up and down the floor to start that game, I thought, this guy's about 5'10", 5'11", right now. I said, that's a high major player. He will be a high major. I knew it. He just plays the game the right way. He has talent. He's got burst. I've never seen a guard do so many things defensively that he can do. And over time, he's really improved his shooting and his ability to understand when to get off the ball, how to set other guys up, and how to go get his own, and when to go get his own. I like him a lot. I love his, you know, his potential down the line. Is he ready to be a starter right now? I don't know. But I think there's so many unknowns. Why not? I'd plug him in there. I think it's going to be Jalen Tate. But like, you know, we're pretending like this is my roster. So I've got K.K. Robinson starting on day one.
All right, let me get you out of here on this one. Depth. We know that Musk likes to run a pretty tight rotation off the bench, very small, 2-3 players, you know, 8-9 at the most. With COVID this year and knowing that contact tracing or positive tests could take out 2, 3, 4 of your guys in a phone call,
yeah.
Do you try to play as many as possible, maybe play them all, even your walk-ons? How would you approach that if you're Eric Musselman?
Well, I think he's tried a lot of combinations throughout preseason, going back to when they had formal stuff starting in July. Obviously, you've got a weaker non-conference schedule. it worked out that way because of COVID. They had to scramble, and they're not playing that many tough games, and most of them are at home. I think you work with combinations. I'm not going to tell Eric Musselman what to do. Here's a proven coach, but I'm going to try a lot of different things in games, especially if I'm, you know, comfortable in a lead. I'm going to work on some different things, but I think they're going to need up to 10 guys this year, maybe 11. There are 11 that are healthy enough to play on scholarship. We may see the need to use all those guys, so I'm working them in as much as I can to get them ready.
Yeah, I wouldn't want a guy coming in his first action being a conference game because of contact tracing, taking three or four guys out, and the first action someone sees is, you know, against LSU or against Tennessee or somewhere. So I don't know. It's going to be an interesting year for everyone, including Arkansas, in that regard.
There's no doubt about it. And, you know, Arkansas, we keep saying all the newcomers, 9 of the 11 that are healthy enough to play on scholarship are newcomers. But, you know, take that with a grain of salt. You've got a lot of veterans from the college game that have played elsewhere. They do have to come together and play together. A red-white game is nice. You'd like to have the two exhibition games probably this year more than ever if you could. They just don't have that. So they're going to have to use this non-conference as testing ground, I think. Now, we'll see what Musselman does. He likes his rotations, and he may say, I know what it is, and I'm sticking with it, and guys will get peripheral minutes, and we'll just roll the dice on that. But I think it would be wise to try to get as many guys as many minutes as you can in this non-conference.
Kevin, just to reiterate, you said Justin Smith, Moses Moody, Desi Sills, K.K. Robinson, and Jalen Williams if you had to pick your starting five, right?
That's it. That's who I'm rolling with. I've got J.D. Notay coming off the bench as my sniper. You know, that guy can give you offense fast. We'll see what he does on the defensive end. And then, you know, I like Vance Jackson Jr. too. I mean, it's also based on matchups. I could rotate him in that five. Connor Vanover's missed a lot of time, but he's going to play. He's going to get minutes. He's going to help Arkansas. And I also love Devontae Davis. He's a big guard that gets rebounds. When he gets a defensive rebound, he turns and throws the ball ahead. He's an opportunistic defender. I mean, he can be a plus defender on the ball, but I see him sneaking in for steals. He's a slasher. He's a guy that down the road is going to be a very good college player for the Razorbacks.
Kevin McPherson, you can follow him on Twitter at @ARHoopScoop. Kevin, we appreciate your time this morning. Enjoy the NBA draft tonight, and hopefully we see Isaiah and Mason's name get called early.
Yeah, I look forward to that. If they do, it'll be the first time since the 90s Arkansas had multiple players selected in one draft.
How about that? So, all right, Kevin, appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
Good stuff from Kevin McPherson.
One of the best, one of our favorite guests, Kevin McPherson, with us here on The Morning Rush.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.